This is a Stand Up New York Labs production, providing you podcasts since 2013.
This is Race Wars.
Race Wars.
I have the power.
Yeah. How's it feel?
With Kurt Metzger.
You're out of your fucking mind, dude.
And Sherrod Small.
Settle down, bitch.
Race Wars.
Oh, Race Wars back in the building. It's a hot show today, White Daughter.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's going to be a hot show.
Yeah, I've already been accused of sweating.
Well,
I've been accused of being oily. That was before this.
Yes, you got a little glow to you. Let's
God
introduce
damn it.
Everybody. Let's
you think right I won't forget?
This. We're going to jump right in. Mark, introduce yourself.
I'm Mark Halperin, author of the new book, How to Beat Trump.
Okay, Mark Halperin, author of the
things.
New book, How to Beat Trump. Are you not a Trump fan?
No. The book is not my advocacy. The book is about what Democrats who are scared to death about Trump winning think needs to be done to beat him. So I talked to a bunch of scared Democrats who have done presidential campaigns and said, what does the nominee need to do? Because beating an incumbent president is hard, and beating this guy is hard.
He's really hard.
He's a beast.
He's
of
like a
candidate.
Pro wrestler. You can't take him down. I can see Joe DeVito's already getting angry because he's pro-Trump.
You say that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Introduce yourself.
Joe DeVito, comedian and author of the book, Four More Years. Four More Years.
Available now in Scratch and Sniff.
Noam, introduce yourself.
Noam Dorman, owner of the Comedy Cellar.
Yes.
That's it.
Full owner?
Yes, full owner.
Full owner, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Welcome back, Noam.
You're welcome, sure.
Yes. So, Mark,
first of all,
tell people who you are and what's going on with you.
What's going on with it?
With you.
With your whole yes. Okay. I was born a poor black man.
Okay. That's a good beginning. It's going to be a good album.
I've covered every presidential campaign since 1988.
Right. Uh-huh.
And
88.
1988. And in 2011... I got a call from Donald Trump.
Okay.
Because I'd seen him speak at a conference, and a lot of politicians spoke at this conference. Trump got the biggest applause.
Right.
So I went on TV and I said, people think Trump's a joke. He's not going to ever run for president, but he talked about immigration. He talked about China. People should take this guy seriously because people respond to him.
Right.
Now, Donald Trump, I like to say, is a complicated man, but in some ways he is simple. If you say nice things about him on television, he likes you.
Right.
So he called me up, and I'd never talked to him before. I knew him like everybody else knew him as a guy on TV.
Okay.
And he said, come on over to Trump Tower.
Wait, so he called you like directly?
He somehow got my number, and he called me, and he said, it's Donald Trump.
Did you think somebody was joking when you first called through? Because I think it was one of my friends fucking with me.
You ever talk to that guy?
Yeah.
That voice. You can't. I mean, with all due respect to Alec Baldwin, nobody can do Trump, real Trump. So he called me up. He said, I saw you on TV. I heard you say those things about me. Come over and let's talk politics. So I was one of the few people who took him seriously when he might run in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then when he ran in 2016, I covered Trump rallies in over 25 states. And I talked to the supporters. So when he won and everybody else was stunned, I wasn't stunned at all.
Yeah, I wasn't stunned. I predicted it on the show.
You predicted it.
Because I traveled
around doing comedy. You and I are in a small group of people who understood that he could win. So he won, and then I talked to Democrats. I said, well, you guys think you're going to beat him next time? These are people who've done politics for 20, 30 years who I've known, and they said, we're scared to death because everybody in our party watches MSNBC and CNN, and if you watch those things, you think Trump's got no chance.
Exactly.
It's 24/7. Trump is dead.
Yeah.
How many incumbent presidents you think have lost since 1900 for re-election? Four.
Nice.
Four since 1900. So that's one historical fact.
Another, who was the last one? Bush?
Bush.
Yeah, Bush and Carter both lost, but then you got to go back to Herbert Hoover before somebody else lost.
He was a bum.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I talked to all these Democrats. They said, we're scared to death. We don't think we have a strong candidate. We think incumbent's hard to beat. What can we do to get the word out about how to beat him? So I thought, that's an interesting topic.
Right.
So I interviewed 75 Democrats, some on the record, some on background, and I said, if you were advising your nominee, what would you tell him to do?
Mm-hmm.
How would you beat this guy? And they had great ideas, super interesting, based on history, based on their knowledge of Trump, including some of the people who worked for Hillary Clinton. But to a person, with one exception, they thought this is a 50-50 thing, or Trump is a favorite to win. And again, you walk around the Upper West Side in New York, you wait in line at Zabar's, you think, no way.
Right.
Trump can't win. Mm-hmm. But these people who are pro said, take this seriously. I'll give you one more historical thing that they talked about. In December of 2011, Barack Obama was running for re-election.
Never heard of him.
he was one of our first black presidents.
Okay, one of them? How many? Had three?
Bill Clinton.
Well, just because you can play the sax don't make you know.
New York Times, in December of 2011, so right around the time we are now in the cycle, they ran a front page story that said, "Is Barack Obama toast?" And they said he had a 17% chance of winning re-election. Now, less than a year later, he's romping over Mitt Romney.
Right.
So people who look at the polls now or look at impeachment and say, oh, Trump's a dead duck. The people I talked to for the book said, no, take this seriously or we'll have four more years of Donald Trump.
Do you think that's why they're trying to impeach him before the election, because they think they can't beat him?
Opposite. Nancy Pelosi, who's one of the smartest people in the party, you remember she resisted impeachment for months. Why? Because she thinks still that impeachment's probably going to make him stronger.
Yeah.
Because the House will impeach him. And then the Senate will not convict him.
Right.
And a lot of people in America are going to say, why did they waste all that time?
Yeah.
Like, they say, well, this Ukraine thing is such a slam dunk. For a lot of voters I talk to, they say, well, what really happened?
Yeah, nobody really cares about the Ukraine. You hate Nancy Pelosi. I know that for a fact.
I like Nancy Pelosi. I don't agree with her politics, but I think she's a very competent politician, you know?
Yeah, but she's doing impeachment not because she thinks it'll hurt Trump. Chances. She thinks it's going to help Trump's chances. That's why she didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Trump can go around saying, they wasted all this time. Mueller wasted time investigating me. The Congress wasted time investigating me. I'm trying to do the people's business. And the other thing is, when was the last time you heard much talk about Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren in health care?
Mm-hmm.
They're blocked out.
Yeah.
These people.
Well, we hear about Joe Biden, but only because of what happened in the Ukraine.
Right,
because
he's connected to that. But you don't hear anything about his ideas for America.
No.
He has no ideas.
Well, that's part of the problem. That's part of the problem. I think you're right.
Is he slow Joe? You trying to say he's slow Joe like Trump said?
Messageless Joe.
I mean, I don't interrupt you. It seems to me that the only people who have ideas are on the left.
Right.
And the country... I know a lot of people think that people love Trump, but I think people just hate the left.
Yeah.
Like, I can't stand Trump.
Yeah.
But voting for Elizabeth Warren, I mean, that's a real nose holding
I was watching a World Series in a bar near here the other night, and sitting next to me were three ladies in their 60s.
Mm-hmm.
They'd worked in theater, they'd been in unions, and they said, we didn't vote last election. This election, we don't want Trump. We hate Trump. But if Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders is a Democratic nominee, we'll either sit it out or we'll vote for Trump.
Yeah.
Wow. And these were Democrats, union people.
It's white women, though. This is white women?
They were
white women voted for Trump the first time.
Some
trying to play it off like they ain't vote for
them.
I mean,
he did.
So how much of his...
She was not white. Go ahead.
How much of this strategy on how to beat Trump it really depends on picking the right candidate?
Well, I mean, part of the reason I wrote the book was so Democrats could look at it and say, who can do this stuff? The book is agnostic regarding who the best candidate is. The question is, who can do the things necessary? Now, ideology is part of it, and a lot of people in the party think nominating somebody who's against private health insurance is a death knell. But these are more strategic things, more tactical things that, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden or anybody else, that all of the strategists I talked to said, whoever we nominate need to do these things. And the biggest thing they said is they need to be thinking about Trump today. If you wait until you're the nominee next spring or summer, it's too late. You got to be thinking about Trump today.
Who's the right person? All these people running, who could be the right person to beat him, though?
Nobody
out of that group.
Yeah, I would have said Biden if he never talked.
He was 20 years younger.
If he just kept his mouth shut.
Yeah.
I don't think having his eyeball explode during a debate was a smart move.
No,
I don't think that affected him. I don't think that affected him.
Well, you know, if the knock on him that the narrative they're trying to sell is he's too old, he's not helping himself by appearing to be rambling, even though he's always a babbler.
The problem is that he can't string together two sentences without sounding not senile, but just like an old man.
Trump will make, I think,
mince
Trump
meat out of him.
You look at Democrats who've been elected president: Kennedy, Clinton, Obama, exciting, young, new, fresh.
Yes.
Carter was relatively young and new.
Well, the peanuts did that for him. The peanuts.
Exactly. Joe Biden is a lot of things. He will never be described as new.
No. I mean,
it's upsetting watching him get attacked constantly. It is like watching your grandpa get yelled at.
Yeah.
Oh, when was it? It hurts.
when Castro was making fun of him for forgetting something.
Oh, yeah. It was disgusting.
Yeah, he's like, you just said it. You forgot already?
Yeah.
He had no chance anyway, but that would have killed him if he did have it, if he had had a chance.
So funny, they make fun of him for forgetting something in the moment, yet they forget that socialism has left a pile of millions of corpses.
All right.
Joey's just getting warmed up.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck
Joey,
Show.
Joey, I have a question. Is socialism good or bad?
I'm going to say that's a no from me, dog. And that is a dog you're going to try and eat if you're in Venezuela.
So what do you think about Trump's the impeachment thing? Do you think, I guess there's two questions. Do you think what he's done is an impeachable offense? Mm-hmm. And then do you think it would be wise to remove him for it as opposed to having an election?
I mean, I'm a little confused because I think he's done like 100 other things that are worse than this.
Like what?
Well, it seemed to have obstructed the Mueller investigation. That seemed more serious.
I don't agree with you, but go ahead.
That he obstructed the Mueller investigation?
Yeah, I don't agree.
Did you read the report?
Yeah, I read very thoroughly.
I mean,
I even debated Neil Katyal on this.
I mean,
never heard of him. Don't be name dropping.
He's a smart man. Look, I think that the president has done a lot of things that have flouted the conventions of the office, and I think he's done a lot of things that have divided the country. What he did in this case, I think any Republican in Congress, if they were being honest, would tell you, was inappropriate. To me, the reality is the Democrats are not going to get this done quickly because Congress never does anything quickly. Impeaching the president and voting him out and trying to vote him out in an election year, I think is a bad idea. Nancy Pelosi thought it was a bad idea. Yeah. Let the voters decide. But what I think what he did was inappropriate, but from just the point of view of a normal voter, what was he? He's accused basically of saying, I want opposition research on Joe Biden, and I'm going to hold up your money. Well, they got their money, and he got no opposition research on Joe Biden. So he's basically like an incompetent bank robber who walks into the bank and says, give me all your money, and then leaves without the money.
But you still get arrested for
attempted robbery.
Yeah.
So I think probably the right thing to do would be to censure him. And to investigate it fully and to censure him, but what Nancy Pelosi said about impeachment, Barack Obama said about health care. Don't do it in a partisan way. Right. Barack Obama said we can't pass universal health care without Republican votes. He tried to get Republican votes, and then he passed it with just Democratic votes. You cannot impeach a president with one party strong-arming it through. It'll divide the country more.
So two things. I agree with you that the best evidence that there was no quid pro quo is that nothing was ever followed through.
But he wanted a quid pro quo.
He wanted it.
He threatened it, but he didn't get it.
But he threatened it, and then the guy said, yes, sir, Mr. President. He hangs up, and then he doesn't investigate Biden. And Trump doesn't call him back and say, hey, we had a deal.
Right. He gave up the money.
So it's kind of like this Trump thing. But what offends me about it most of all, and I haven't heard anybody really talk about this. You tell me if I'm out to lunch here. I think this is a big civil liberties violation. I don't see the bribery thing so much. The president of the United States shouldn't be finding a way for a foreign government to investigate an American citizen without the procedural rights an American citizen has.
Yeah. Right.
He's a fiduciary to that citizen.
Yeah.
And that bothers me way more than anything else.
Yeah, no question. Although I will say, I agree with you, but I'll also say, you know, Bill Clinton got help from Tony Blair when he was running for president.
But he didn't investigate an American citizen.
Yeah. Well, but help is help. It's interference in an election.
Right, but I think help is okay. But like I had a friend who was caught up in the Mueller investigation, actually, and he was cleared. And I say, well, imagine if President Warren says, you know what, I'm not satisfied with this Mueller investigation. And she calls up some foreign government and says, listen, can you look into this
You're
dude?
Absolutely right.
That's
You're absolutely right. But Donald Trump's view of the presidency, like, He's like, well, Lyndon Johnson did this kind of stuff, so I can do this kind of stuff. You know, J. Edgar Hoover investigated Martin Luther King and a bunch of other people. So he has a cartoon version of what's appropriate.
Yeah.
I think this is bad, and I think it should be fully investigated, and I think it should be something that Congress talks a lot about. But I think he's done a bunch of other stuff that is also offensive to civil liberties. It's also offensive to the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment.
Will some of these things come out? Will some of these things roll out? You think with all these testimonies going on, everybody's testifying, so things that we don't even know about yet might come reveal itself.
The reality is the Republican Party has tied themselves to Donald Trump.
Oh, no question about it.
So when Donald Trump says, I could walk out on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and they wouldn't abandon me, people may think that's funny or hyperbole.
I think that's somebody's Melania.
It's fact. It's fact. They're not gonna abandon him. The base of the party is not gonna abandon him. The members of Congress aren't gonna abandon him. This man led the birther movement. This man made the Access Hollywood tape. This man wanted to ban Muslims from immigrating, coming to the United States. Mm-hmm. He has already shown him who he is and what he's about. And a lot of Americans say
they're fine.
That's all good.
By the way, is there truth? I think I seem to remember you talking about this once years ago. Is there truth to the fact that the Clinton campaign was the first ones to bring up the birther thing?
Supporters of Hillary.
Oh,
Clinton.
Hillary. Yeah.
Supporters. Yeah. Not the campaign, but supporters did. And Hillary Clinton certainly was interested in it. She was interested in Reverend Wright.
Of course she was.
You know?
Yeah. They floated it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
Hillary, you know.
Reverend Wright was legit. That's a legit issue to me. But
yeah. I mean, something he certainly should explain, and he did.
What, he can't
it.
Be friends with a black reverend?
I think that given the kind of stuff that was coming out of that guy's mouth.
It's a separation of church and state.
To call him his mentor. If you put the shoe on the other foot of any kind of any other race or any other religion, would have been problematic. Yeah,
and his relationship with Bill Ayers was also questionable, and a guy named Tony Rezko. They weren't African American; they were just white guys.
Misunderstood, fellas.
I think that if a white candidate had been going to a minister, his mentor who was spouting out a lot of racist stuff or bigoted stuff, that would be the end of him. That's what I think.
Well, it'd be a problem. Yeah. Remember Reverend Wright's signature line?
Goddamn America. Yeah,
there's that. But the one I like was chickens coming home. You got to hold it. Home.
Cultural appropriation.
I think one of the problems is that the Democrats keep investing in things where they're looking for things to say, what makes Trump look bad? Mm. And he's not someone you can make look bad. Right. He doesn't give a shit.
Right.
And the people who support him don't care.
Well, if Trump didn't make Trump look bad, you're not going to make Trump look
exactly.
bad.
Exactly. He's not someone with a lot of shame. He's not a traditional politician.
No,
where
zero
he's,
shame.
This is embarrassing. Yeah. So those things don't work. And they've tried with, oh, he's with a porn star. Well, yeah, the Donald Trump we've known for decades. It's like high five. He was with a porn star.
Yeah.
And they try to float this. People still talk about this thing about women peeing on a hotel bed as if it's a true story. It's like these are made up things that
what
you're
story? What story?
They said
is
that?
That
he hired prostitutes to pee on a bed.
I think
in
they
a
were
hotel.
Actually under the most of the oral tradition. They were gifted to him. He did not.
You hired? Okay. Somehow prostitutes peed on a bed because the Obamas had stayed in the hotel room. It's a complete bullshit story, but it fits in with this ridiculous caricature that people who hate him want to believe.
Right. Yeah.
But people don't care.
No, the character, that fact is not true. The caricature is true.
The character is true. Yeah. But but that's who he is, and he's been famous for what, 30, 40 years?
Easily.
So
he does love Trump.
No, but this is what I'm saying.
He's a student of Trump.
Trump may do things that shock you, but you can't be surprised.
Because he got grandfathered in. I was talking to Dice Clay about the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
A Dice Clay, I was talking about the same kind of thing at the comedy club a couple weeks ago. I was like, nobody comes after him for what he's saying because he got grandfathered in. It's like, you already know what Dice does. Yeah. So he can talk about whatever he wants to because you look stupid coming
but
after him
the other point
because you know what he does.
Like, what are you going to go back and say, look what we found on Dice that he said? It's like, from his special that he released?
Yeah.
But the other thing you said first is so important for the Democrats who want to beat Trump, which is, you are not going to beat Trump at his game. You're not going to wrestle with him and beat him. But at the same time, you have to accept the facts. One of the people I talked to said, Trump doesn't control the news. Trump is the news.
Yeah. Yeah.
You cannot out-tweet him. You cannot out-insult him. You have to figure out a way to present yourself to the American people in a way that they say, I like that better. But if you try to take him down, there's just no chance.
He's a master troller. I mean, some of the stuff he puts on Twitter, it blows my mind that his timing in that, in a way, it's like a micro version of, if you pull back and people say he got lucky or whatever, if you pull back and watch those interviews of him from the 80s and they ask him what would need to happen for you to run for president, and you watch and you're like, holy shit, he was waiting for a moment that he called out decades ago. So you can't just say he was lucky or whatever. He was, but if you look at some of his tweets and you pull back that, oh, he deliberately said this thing to rile up this audience, to distract them from this, nobody's that lucky. It may be an animal cunning, but...
I once said he was the second best presidential candidate of the modern era, and I was attacked. I think Bill Clinton was better, but I think Trump's the second best. I said Trump had Corey Lewandowski and Twitter. That's how he won. He had nothing else. I mean, he had no money. He didn't raise any money. He didn't have a big staff. That's just a guy putting a thing on his own back and winning. Mm-hmm. And that's why, that's one, another reason he's so formidable for reelection. Mm-hmm. It's the same guy, same Twitter feed, same animal instincts, and $1.5 billion to spend attacking the Democrats.
So let me ask you a question. What issue Because I think that Trump is far closer to the American people on his actual stance on issues than Elizabeth Warren is, for sure. On what issue would you say Trump is most out of step, policy issue, with the American people?
Well, one that comes to mind right away that Democrats would like to exploit, but because they're talking about impeachment, they're not, is Trump is for getting rid of the Affordable Care Act, including the protection of people who have pre-existing conditions to not be denied health care coverage. Well, no, it's the law, but Trump's supporting a lawsuit to get rid of that. And the American people strongly support no one being denied coverage if they've got a pre-existing condition.
That lawsuit is pretty much considered to be going nowhere, though, right?
No, it might. You never know. But so that's one. And I'd say another thing is that he's not as much in favor of environmental protection as most of the American people are.
Your boy. But, see, DeVito, that's your boy.
I think that's a trade-off, though,
for deregulation,
correct,
though.
People like
deregulation.
They do. But just to go to the flip side of what you said, on immigration, on getting tough with China, and not being the world's policeman, he is right with the American people. And most elites don't get that. Most elites say, oh, we should have a lot of immigrants come from Mexico. Most elites say, oh, we shouldn't mess with China because we need a lot of trade with them. Most elites say, oh, we need to be part of NATO and, you know, we need to do our part. Most of the American people don't feel that way. So he is on positions that he actually takes and executes, I think he is in line with the American people.
Elizabeth Warren says, I want to decriminalize
the border
and extend full medical benefits cradle to grave to all illegals, I feel like all Trump has to do is say, come on.
Correct.
Get a load of this.
Just show the video. Roll the clip.
They're migrants.
And eliminating private health insurance. A lot of the Democrats I talked to for the book said those two positions alone, all Trump has to do is say those two things on Facebook over and over again and in the debates, those two positions alone are 70-30 in Trump's favor.
And announcing her pronouns. I mean, just on the anti-political correctness of the man. I mean, he reverberates with...
He wants to save Christmas.
Yeah, he wants.
She doesn't.
No, but you know what I mean? Just kind of like dismissing all this woke culture and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that may run up his popular vote loss, but I think in the swing states, he reverberates.
Guess what? He doesn't really care if he loses the popular vote. Yeah. He'll be wiped out in California. He'll be wiped out in New York. But in Wisconsin, if you ask people about the kind of issues you just raised...
What will it take for these people to fucking
have a message and think every day, how am I going to beat Donald Trump? They're not thinking about it. All they're thinking about is each other. Now, you got to get the nomination, because if you don't get the nomination, having a plan to beat Trump doesn't mean anything. But you got to be thinking about it, and you've got to have a message that excites people. You got to tell an American story.
Who does?
They really don't. And you know, the traditional primary swing to the... You always swing to the extremes in the primary, and then you come back to the middle for the general election.
I don't think you can do that anymore,
because if you go that far to the left,
I got a challenge.
You can't come
back. I got
back.
A challenge on that.
Okay.
Bill Clinton ran in 1992.
You know who you're talking to, right?
You realize you're talking to a club comedian here?
Who's played the best clubs. Bill Clinton ran in 1992, okay? 4 years after Michael Dukakis was a Democratic nominee. What are Bill Clinton's positions? He supported free trade. He supported the death penalty. He supported right to work. He supported welfare reform, and he said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare. Those positions were unimaginable for a Democrat to hold, to be elected to Congress 4 years before. So that's a case where a guy did not run to the extreme.
That's true. I guess he's an outlier.
To some extent, George Bush, when he ran for president in the Republican Party, he said, I want a big role for the federal government in education. He said we should not balance the budget on the back of the poor. He said he talked about issues that were more centrist. So those two guys ran more to the center than the extreme. So they're two of the four most recent presidents.
And they were two successful ones.
Yeah.
I don't think that Democrats, they're trying to, even when Elizabeth Warren is at these, it wasn't a debate, it was like one of these open forums, whatever they call it, where she said to that child, well, I would run at my appointments past you. People hear that and they think, what is this nonsense you're talking? That you know, I think of... What is her name from San Francisco? Not Pelosi, but
Feinstein.
Feinstein. When they brought out the little kids saying, "We demand you listen to us," and she kind of was like, "Kids don't know what you're talking about, so trust the grown-ups." Right. Like, that's the kind of message that gets things done. But people don't want to hear. People are like, "Oh, can we get a mentally ill Swedish child to lecture us on the environment?"
And then
people think that's who we're supposed to listen to.
Let him talk the way he wants to talk. Yeah. You don't like that Swedish girl telling us a safe planet?
I feel like she's being exploited by the people around her.
Yes, but she's not mentally ill. That's not nice.
She's got severe personality disorders.
All right.
That's why she goes through a special school for that. She won't eat. She's a seriously ill
and,
child.
And President Trump.
She's just autistic. Yeah, right. What about the president?
What about the president?
And by the way,
what do we mean? She's got eating things. He eats steak.
But
well
I'm saying is, like,
because
he's the president of the United States, we're stuck listening to him.
I have a question about the debate.
I know, but we chose to listen to her too. I mean, she became really popular. Not she wasn't forced on us. People were just like, okay.
She was exploited by the people around her.
What do you mean exploited by? Like,
why else do we drag in and say it's like when people say, "But what about the children?" Because they don't have an argument to make.
Right.
It's the same as when people say, when my 8-year-old came up to me and said, "Daddy, how come we don't have drag queen story time at the library?" It's like, what is this fake?
Where'd you get this guy? Jimmy Carter did it with his daughter Amy, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. Because it works. It's very.
Can I tell you what
convincing.
I believe? I believe the children are the future.
They're not. Yeah. Well, now if there's only 12 more years.
I want to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Is it protective? What's going on? Maybe I'm mistaken. Actually, I don't recall a single question to the Democrats yet about Israel.
Come on, no. Is everything going to go back to Israel with Jews?
Literally everything is about Israel.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm wondering if they're protecting the Democrats from having to answer that.
You have just tapped into one of the things that that the people I talked to for the book are worried about, which is foreign policy and national security. Trump's record is not flawless, to say the least, but he has been commander-in-chief, and he's not gotten us in any wars. And he's had a few pretty successful things when he bombed Syria, just what he did a couple weeks ago and taking out the leader of ISIS.
I'll take it a step further. I think he's made it clear he really doesn't want to get into a war. Like we actually believe
that. Yes, he says that.
Yeah.
And that's where the American people are. Yeah. We fought these endless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, so costly in blood and treasure. Trump ran, and he's thought that's been his position for his whole life, even when he's a businessman. So they're not asking about Israel. But you tell me this. Elizabeth Warren, you followed her campaign. Tell me one thing she believes about national security or foreign policy. One thing. The reason you don't know is the press never asks her. They ask her political questions, and they ask her about economics and health care. Mm-hmm. These candidates are not right now getting questions about Israel, about Russia, about almost anything in the debates. A few, but not enough, so they're establishing. When Trump ran for president, people knew what he stood for in foreign policy. These candidates are not making their mark.
But of course, Israel is a double-edged issue.
It's a mess over there.
Foreign policy, it also impinges on the whole intersectional woke community.
Yes.
Right. You cannot be, it's like being pro-white to be pro-Israel.
It's one of the litmus tests.
Especially
for an academic. Someone who comes out of an academic environment, they're pretty hostile.
I don't see how you can run on the left side of the Democratic Party and you're going to have to double talk about Israel. You're just going to have to double
Trump,
talk.
Trump has left them some room because he has gone, for some people who follow closely, he's gone too far pro-Israel, not enough.
We call them goyim.
Not enough. He's basically abandoned the two-state solution. He's not made any progress with outreach to the Palestinians. So
zero.
Trump has gone so far on that side that he's left them some room. But you're right. They're vulnerable on that because of the ascendant wing of the party, the AOC wing, the squad wing of the party, is certainly going to have a lot of litmus tests on Israel for those candidates if they get asked about it. I don't think they're being protected. I think just in general, reporters don't care enough about foreign policy. And it's another way reporters who want Trump to lose are helping him win because they're not testing these Democrats so they can show who's got the chops to stand up to him as commander-in-chief.
Well, how about the fact Elizabeth Warren agrees with Trump on tariffs and probably on foreign policy?
We don't know.
Yeah, well, how is she going to distinguish herself?
I could see how she doesn't want to discuss foreign policy, seeing as how her Native American people got screwed over so many times and all those deals with the federal government.
Pocahontas.
So I could see it's a very sore spot with her.
But what about the Pocahontas issue? Is that still hanging over her?
Has she already proven, then, that she can't stand up to him because she loses at his own game?
That was the worst possible move. I think we have a sample space of one. When Donald Trump and Elizabeth Warren tangled, and she lost miserably.
Miserably.
I am amazed.
I mean, it's like watching trains collide. Yeah. Like, we'd all just see it coming. Don't do it.
People,
don't take the test.
The people I talked to the book said, how can we be putting everything on Elizabeth Warren when the one thing you need to be able to do to beat Trump is to tangle with him and win.
Right. Yeah.
And they said, if you tangle with him and lose, move on.
Right.
If you tangle with him and win, move on. Yeah. Because Trump's moving on. She tangled with him once. She lost. And then she came back to try to make it right and releasing her DNA test.
Yeah, right.
And it was a disaster.
She lost in the most SNL sketch-worthy possible way. Yeah. I mean, how do you forget that?
It was a self-own.
It was an epic own.
In Europe, we call it an own goal.
He scrambled her brain so much that she took the test. She released it. It showed she was 1/1000th or whatever it was, and still
less
held it
than
up.
Everyone at this
she
level.
Less than any one of us here. Still, she still held it up and said, "See, see." When they asked him about
poor
what he
baby.
Thought, he said. Who cares? From cradle to grave.
It's actually absurd. I have children who are more African American than Elizabeth Warren claimed to be Native American.
Yeah.
The very notion that my kids could go around, you know, like writing African American cookbooks and stuff like that is so absurd. Yeah. In other words, even if she really was 1024, like she really thought this somehow vindicated her or 3% or anything like that.
She didn't give that money back though, did she?
And by the way, her scholarship is a fraud. You know?
What do you mean?
Elizabeth Warren.
She didn't give that money back.
Megan McArdle, is that her name? She wrote a pretty good takedown of Elizabeth.
Republicans are sitting on a lot of opposition research about her, and if the Democrats nominate her before she proves she can tangle with Trump and survive, they're fools.
It's not yes.
Yeah, how are we going to deal with 4 more years of Trump?
All right. So, what do you think about Andrew Yang, who's my personal favorite?
I'm pro Yang.
I'm so pro Yang.
I'm pro Yang.
Here's why I'm pro
Yang.
I've got the hat. It's too big.
Here's why I'm pro Yang, because I think it's great that somebody who's not a career politician, who's not super connected,
100%.
Can raise money, can get on that stage, can communicate effectively with people, can raise ideas. What I wish was he'd come up with some new jokes, because I've heard all the jokes already that he tells over and over.
I heard Shane Gillis is
You know what I want? In the next debate he's in, assuming he's in another debate, I want him to wear one of those T-shirts that's got a tie on it.
Right? Okay,
I think that'd be like 50 T-shirts.
I'd like him to wear those glasses with the Caucasian eyes. You know?
Oh, no. Lord have mercy, no.
But I think it's great that he's been treated pretty seriously by the media establishment.
Can an Asian win, Mark? Stop beating around the bush. Can an Asian dude president.
As compared to the gay guy from Indiana or the 370-year-olds? I mean, pick your poison. There's not a perfect candidate in this race.
Do you think somebody's going to jump in?
Hold on, Sherrod. I want to ask you something. You must have seen it. The article which showed that the, I guess it was the internal analysis of the Buttigieg campaign says that they have a big problem getting black votes because black people are not so keen on
homosexuality,
not all black people, but some black.
But that's the obstacle.
Yeah. Definitely, like churchy not all people. Even though black.
Can we just set a permanent disclaimer that whenever we say black people, we don't mean all black people.
Okay.
I know you.
The ones you've
older,
met.
Older black voters in like South Carolina who vote.
Yeah.
There's a lot of skepticism.
Now, what occurred to me about this that really bugged me is that if this was any other cohort, if this was any other segment of the population, that it turned out would not vote for the gay candidate. That would be an article about bigotry.
Mm.
I think it's the same
with white
Trump
voters
Christians,
between 55
though.
And won't tolerate a gay. They're horrible. They're bigots. They're prejudiced.
But I think it's
somehow,
the same with church people, white or black.
I agree with you.
Even though most of the gays are in church.
I actually do agree with you.
To be much more church going.
I actually agree with you that it's not may not be racial.
But we never did reparations,
the point is,
so they get a pass.
They get nobody will call them out on it because. For the obvious reason.
Yeah, but honestly, it's like Kurt's joke about reparations, right? That if we just give reparations, everybody could say the N-word. Like, there's so many rules because we just haven't addressed this historical wrong.
I think Barack Obama proved when people say, can we elect an Asian American or a woman? Can we elect a gay American? I think the answer is yes. It's got to be the right person.
You got to be cool than a motherfucker, though. You got to be like Obama, cool, and walking around and talking.
On Monday Night Football, going on the Oscars.
Fitting in everywhere.
Mayor Pete ain't it.
Mayor Pete ain't it.
He's got problems there with the police force. And
his own town,
I like Yang because at least he has some ideas.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear someone else other than the bullshit we've already heard from everybody else.
And he seems barely partisan, doesn't he? Doesn't he seem like he's just
trying.
Accidentally running as a Democrat and is just really in the middle?
I really like Marianne Williamson, even though she's nutty. I just can't figure out how she got on the
come
stage.
On.
But I think she's interesting because she's the only one who's not mean. I mean, she has no chance of running.
I have
nice
another question.
Yeah, she's got good vibes.
She reminds me of like you're at a holiday thing, a holiday family event, and everyone's fighting, and you have an aunt who stands up and says, well, we're family. Why are we all fighting? And you think, oh, she's right. But then she starts to talk some more, and you're like, like, yeah, somebody shut this lady up. She's nuts. She's crazy.
I have another question.
Yes, sir.
Bloomberg.
Oh,
now,
boo.
Now, how...
Fucking boo.
He had said something like he didn't want to get in. One of the reasons he didn't want to get in is because he was afraid of throwing the race to Trump.
Right.
Mm. How does his analysis change if he decides, oh, Trump is going to win anyway?
And why do you go to Buttigieg to Bloomberg, by the way?
Because I'm thinking about
the beast. What
you don't know the secret, though.
Because I think that you're Bloomberg, I think that
you
the whole country is like me.
You mean as an independent or as a Democrat?
I don't know. Either one. I think he could appeal to me, so I feel like he could win. That's why.
He has positions that are so far to the left on, for instance, guns.
Guns?
That winning Wisconsin would be a super challenge. He's got positions on economics and criminal justice that are so far to the right that winning California would be a challenge.
And let's, you know, the elephant in the room.
And he doesn't.
Will America elect the Jewish fella?
A Jewish gay fella.
Of Jewish, that's why I said Buttigieg. That's why I said you went from Buttigieg.
He's also in his 70s.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of money, and he's got a record of accomplishment as mayor.
But we know how he feels about Israel.
He doesn't seem old.
He has looked at running for president now for about a dozen years, and he's a rational guy, and he has really smart advisors, and they don't think he can get 270 electoral votes, and I don't think he can get 270 electoral votes, and he doesn't want to run to make a statement, and he certainly doesn't want to run if there's even a chance that would help Trump get reelected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think Hillary is waiting for a moment to strike?
Nope.
No.
You don't think she's planning on trying to get back in?
I don't, because Biden takes up space. This is like a slow motion car crash for the party.
Yeah.
Biden is keeping Hillary from thinking about it, John Kerry, Terry McAuliffe, all these Democrats who might have a better chance, because Biden's taking up space. And he's going to take up that space until he finishes fourth in Iowa, potentially, at which point it'll be too late. He could finish fourth.
Who's going to beat him in Iowa?
Sanders, Warren, Buttigieg, or maybe even Amy Klobuchar. I think
Harris. Okay. I think Harris got a chance.
Harris is done.
Harris today announced a big layoffs in her campaign. She's hadn't raised the money.
Oh no,
she's horrible.
She
pulls around the same as Tulsi.
Leverage. Yeah,
she pulls low.
I think today Biden would finish fourth in Iowa. Wow. Now he might do better. He's got a chance, but he's going to have a message. Mm.
So, all right, who do you think could win the nomination? Who would get their ass kicked the worst by Trump? Who do you think could win? Get the nomination, still get.
I think Warren, until she proves herself, I think Warren is potentially somebody who could lose a lot of states to Trump. Now, she could also beat Trump, potentially, but like I said,
she's a smarter person, too, isn't she?
In what way, though?
I mean, she's
proven
it. How
are we measuring smarts?
In academics?
Who cares?
I mean,
we don't care.
You know, Jimmy Carter was probably smarter than Ronald Reagan in some, you know, basically, he was an engineer. I don't know, Al Gore, George Bush.
Well, Ronald Reagan looked good on camera, though, didn't he? Yeah, I mean, he had the looks.
I'm too young.
Bill Clinton, one of the things he says is super smart. He says, in politics, sometimes it is better to be strong and wrong than right and weak.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard for any first-time candidate, and just to be frank, any woman candidate who's not Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State, served on the Armed Services Committee, First Lady, I think people overstate how easy it will be for a woman to clear that hurdle in the eyes of the voters. And until we hear her talk about foreign policy, I don't know. How tough is she on Putin? I got no idea, because she never talks about it.
Who, Warren?
Yeah.
Now, I used to be a close watcher of Morning Joe.
Yeah.
And first of all, I thought the show really, really suffered without you.
My mother agrees.
I stopped watching, but I was wondering at the time, did you think that Trump was a Russian asset through all that?
I thought then what I think now, which is his attitude towards Putin and towards Russia is inexplicable, because you know this never gets any coverage, but he has imposed extremely tough economic sanctions on Russia. So if he's a Russian asset, he is hurting Putin's friends quite a bit in terms of economics. The oligarchs are hurting.
Oligarchs. You hate to see them suffer, right? Yeah.
they're so sympathetic. But Putin cares about that. But then he stands in the Oval Office and he gives information to the Russians, classified information to the Russians. So I to this day do not understand his posture towards Russia. Do I think he's an asset? I don't. But it's something messed up about his attitude towards Putin in particular and Russia more generally that I just don't get.
Well, isn't it just the Pat Buchanan mentality that he generally has anyway about that we shouldn't be poking the Russians and we shouldn't have been messing around in Ukraine anyway and sanctions against the Russians until he pull out of Crimea or sanctions till the end of time, right?
There's definitely a part of that. But again, why is he putting such tough sanctions on them?
I guess he succumbed to the pressure. I don't think he really wanted them.
Yeah. Isn't that what an asset would do to make us think he wasn't an asset?
Yeah, to throw us off the trail. Yeah.
That's like on Gilligan's Island. So, like, no one could be as dumb as Gilligan. He must be a genius.
This is a fucking ginger.
So what happened on Morning Joe, I began... Can I talk freely? Or because I think that reading between the lines, they seem pretty loyal to you, actually. They really seem like, at least from the viewer, now you don't have to...
They're very nice people.
They really seemed like they went as far as they could without, you know, putting their head on the guillotine and when it was, but that every bit about them wanted to defend you as well as they could.
They were very great, very generous people to me, and they've been friends of mine for a long time. Yeah. The reality is, in the climate we're in, it's impossible for anybody to speak up without fear of retribution.
Oh. Yeah.
So they'll come after. So I don't have anything to say except I'm grateful for my friends and the current climate is such that it's very difficult to. I mean, I'll talk about take Charlie Rose. Okay, Charlie Rose has been accused of some very serious things.
Yeah.
He's I think the greatest interviewer in the history of the medium of television. You haven't read a single positive word about Charlie Rose in 2 years. Mm-hmm. You could say he's accused of horrible things, he's acknowledged doing horrible things, but also, by the way, the greatest interviewer in the history of television. Yeah. But we're just not in a climate now where someone can even utter that. Where Barack Obama said today, he said, we have to be more gracious to people. There are people who do bad things who also do good things.
Yeah.
And the culture's just
people so quick to write somebody off, though. You know, they just want to write people off and put them on Kurt used to say Kramer's Island.
Yeah, it's because everything's a meme, right? So like people don't like nuance, and they don't like a thing that can't be boiled down to a little picture with a little sentence on top of it.
But you're right. You can condemn. I've condemned my own behavior. You can condemn Charlie Rose's behavior, but that doesn't mean you have to say they are banned from Earth.
Yes.
That they have no and the accomplishments that they did that helped the society have to be erased. So but that's where we are.
So actually, I wasn't trying to focus on that issue, but since you brought it, is this correct? Because if it is correct, that whatever the stuff that you were accused of doing was like 15 years ago.
Everything's more than a dozen years old.
More than a dozen years ago, and you stopped on your own, and then got counseling for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then had no more accusations of it for 12 years.
Ten years. I haven't worked for two, but for 10 years.
So, I mean...
Wow.
I mean, this is not someone who was caught, who was stopped. This is somebody who
recognized the situation in himself.
Was doing something they shouldn't be doing.
Right.
Got a hold of themselves and stopped. Now, normally, in a normal moral universe, that's the person who gets the best dispensation. It's the person who denies implausibly that would normally get our contempt.
Right.
But the people who continue to deny implausibly, like Bill Clinton, let's say, they're still in good standing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what burns me up about this, the hypocrisy of it all.
Well, Mark Ronson wrote about that, didn't he? About shame.
He
said that the people who publicly admit shame, like a normal human being, right, who say, I'm sorry and try to make amends, those are the people who get crucified.
Yeah, you
it's
can't
like
show
you give
any
people
weakness.
The rope. Mm-hmm.
You can't show any, and unfortunately, we equate that action, which is supposed to be a very purifying, a very humbling thing, we equate that with a show of weakness and supplication. And I think that is...
For her benefit, what is supplication?
But if you even look at one of the reasons I think Trump has been so successful is because he never apologizes, he never backs down. Now, I can't say that is a good way to lead your life, but it's an effective one at that very high level. The question is, do we want to live in a world where just by never apologizing and always doubling down and always pushing through is the right thing to do.
Ironically, it's only the right thing to do in public. So if you're talking to the public, that's what people want. In private, that never flies. That's not going to work with your wife. It's not going to work with your husband. It doesn't work with your friends. You have to say, I'm sorry, make amends. But in public, for some reason, the crowd thinks differently than the individual.
Oh, always.
And they'll hang you for it.
Yeah. They only want to see you up, or they want to see you dragged very far down. But they never want to see you in between.
Right.
Yeah. But go ahead. I took responsibility for what I did, and as you said, I stopped doing it 12 years ago. But
What caused you to stop, if I might ask? What was
I recognized that I was hurting people and I was hurting my own life and I was making myself toxic in my workplace.
Was it because somebody threatened you or somebody?
Literally, no one said a word to me. No colleague, no woman who I sexually harassed. No one said a word to me. I just recognized that I needed to get out of there and start over working in a different place and get counseling and understand my behavior and take responsibility. I didn't take enough responsibility because I didn't go back and apologize to the people who I had hurt, who I had harmed. I should have done that, but I didn't have any role models for that. Mm. I take responsibility for failing to do it.
Have you tried to reach out since then?
I have. Yeah. I have been for 2 years, and I have as much as I can. It's a hard thing to do because you don't want to re-traumatize anybody. Yeah. So you contact them directly. You do it through an intermediary. It's a hard thing to do, but I've been able to do it with some people.
Okay.
And I'm trying to do it with everybody, but it is a difficult thing to do. But the, as you suggested before, the culture should embrace that because we're going to have people do wrong things, mm-hmm. and people are imperfect. So when people make mistakes, if they're willing to acknowledge them, take responsibility for them, to set an example as best they can, to be part of the conversation, that should be embraced, not scorned or disregarded. But that's largely not where we are as a society.
Because we're going to push people away from actually getting the help that they need to get, because they're going to be ashamed that if they do get the help, they're still gonna get fucking torn down.
Yeah, and it also makes. I feel like you have to look at things through a lens of what was appropriate at a time, and there's some things that can not be excused but understood differently.
I don't think that would be helpful to him.
I'm just
to make that argument, and I don't think he's making that argument.
No,
I don't think this was appropriate.
But I'm just saying that there are awareness of things now. That there are even, you know, we come at this from the view of jokes and things that you can joke about.
Right. It's been hilarious for the last 5 minutes.
So you do get it.
But there are things that so you could make a joke about, and you look at it now, and you might say, well, that's I understand now that would not be an appropriate thing to approach that way.
Right.
But there are things in a time frame where it's too easy to look back and say, with today's sensibilities apply. And again, it doesn't work for everything, but I think that if we can't talk about these things in an honest way, that the people who are legitimately interested in harming other people, they'll just keep doing it because
right.
we can't talk about it in a rational way. And I think where we get frustrated as a society is that the good people will listen. So they end up getting punished because the bad people don't give a shit.
They don't give a fuck.
They don't care. There's nothing you can say to a rapist to embarrass them to stop raping because it's not – they don't care already.
Right.
Whereas there are people who can have a reflection and say, oh, shit, you know, maybe I now I understand why I should conduct myself. And obviously I'm not referring to your situation here, but, you know, you can look back and say, all right, now I get it. But to just write off people wholesale – I don't think we can do that. I think
it's also hard to facilitate communication between generations, I feel like.
Yeah.
There's a generational gap, like you saw with the Joe Biden hugs and stuff, where the stuff that was, even that wasn't, maybe he crossed lines, but for the most part, that seems like it was not inappropriate. And now it's like unheard of. You can't touch someone like that.
You know
what I mean? And like the young people are not, they're gonna have decades of growing up before they think that way.
I just want to just be careful here. It's really for your sake, everybody's sake.
Yeah.
That what you're saying shouldn't be confused with being relevant to Mr. Halpern's situation, which he acknowledged was inappropriate, and that's why he stopped
that's
doing
separate.
It.
Yeah,
you're right.
So
and
all
I
these
wasn't,
things
I wasn't
can,
careful,
sounded, can be turned
no,
against him to make it
I
seem
understand.
As if he
that,
was
that's
trying
not
to
my
pretend.
Intent at all. That's
and
not
I
my intent. I'm not talking about behaviors that are excusable or inexcusable. I'm talking about like redemption. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm talking about that. I'm saying that there's a generational gap in what people are willing to accept as an apology.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
There is a huge generational gap, and I think the society needs to grapple with it more than we have. At the same time, there's a reality. It was true when I worked at ABC for 25 years and I left 12 years ago. It's true now. Workplaces are better for white men than for anybody else.
Preach.
Yeah. So
I've been saying that for
They're worse for women. They're worse for non-white people.
Yeah.
And it's gotten better, but it's still unacceptable. And sexual harassment is still part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to recognize that, yes, standards have changed. What's acceptable has changed. Some good, some maybe not. But there needs to be more of an effort to accept the fact that there needs to be communication, and there needs to be equality and safety in workplaces for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's no that. That project's not done. Mm-hmm. And as a country, we shouldn't rest till it's done.
Mm-hmm. So, the reason I started with the Morning Joe stuff, so I stopped watching Morning Joe because I felt I started referring to it as Morning Grudge. I felt that they become so angry with him that they lost me. And I used to watch it because they
angry with Trump.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe for good reason. I mean, he was very offensive to Mika. And, but that I used to love that show because it would have the best version of every credible argument on on a subject. It became all from one side. And the people like Dershowitz or the Wall Street Journal types or some of the people in National, the Andrew McCarthy, who were making pretty good arguments as to why this thing was going to go nowhere, were banished from the thing. And then John Heilman, I know is your friend, the last time I watched, he accused Devin Nunes twice on the same show of being a Russian agent.
Being Russian agents?
And nobody challenged him. And nobody challenged him. I'm like, well, this is gone. This stick out of the deep end here.
I can see you throwing something to the TV.
I think that all of MSNBC and all of CNN have done that. And as I said earlier, they're getting the president reelected.
Morning Joe was outside. That's right. But MSNBC always did that.
The daytime. I think the daytime has become that too. Okay. I think the media has taken sides, and it's not the role of the media.
Yeah. Yep.
They may personally dislike Donald Trump, but they are now an arm of the Democratic Party, which is what conservatives have said for 50 years, but now they're acting that way unambiguously. Mm-hmm. And the irony is it will help Donald Trump get reelected for two reasons primarily. One is it's going to energize Republicans to turn out. And number two, it's giving liberals the sense, of course Trump's going to lose.
Yeah.
Of course he's going to lose, because I watch the news all day and all I hear is how horrible Trump is. Everybody must be hearing this. No, a few people watching cable news are hearing it.
Yeah, they're doing the same dumb argument they did when he got elected.
And they're giving him credibility. He called them fake news, and now they're being fake news.
Correct.
And they keep losing, like they keep jumping the gun on things and not researching before they shoot their mouths off. It is funny, though. You do want that balance. I used to enjoy on Fox News when the late Alan Combs was on, because his role was to be pleasant and sort of lose gracefully. He was there to win, but he was nice.
He was like the Washington Generals against the Globe Trotters.
The Generals.
Yeah. Remember Al Franken's book? You read where he used to have Hannity in big letters and Combs in a tiny font.
The Generals would score a couple baskets, hit a few threes.
They had a family.
But in the end, we knew where it was going to end.
I love reading about the game where the Generals were close enough and they were like, fuck it, we're going for it. And the children were crying because they beat the Harlem Globetrotters.
Did you see today, anybody see today, and I think it was Washington Post, that Richard Stengel wrote a column essentially endorsing hate speech laws and revising the First Amendment? Did you see that?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I did not. He's my former boss.
What did he say?
I'll recuse myself.
Okay.
I didn't see it.
He wrote a column saying, people ask me why is it illegal to burn a Koran? And he's like, well, that's a fair question. Maybe we should have hate speech laws. And, by the way, there's a lot of disinformation out there from Russia, and maybe we should be rethinking the First Amendment entirely.
Yeah. What?
He was pushing it as a...
It's an unbelievable column.
He was pushing it as a way like, and this would help keep Trump in check.
Yeah,
which is a very anti-airy way to sell
the dark days.
And
made me think of it as what you were saying before. When I read that, I'm like, I can't vote for these people. Mm-hmm. If that's the Overton window, if that's the shift, I can't.
Yeah.
And that used to be your boss, that dude?
He was one of my bosses. Yeah, Time Magazine. He was the editor of Time, and I worked at Time when I left at ABC.
He was just sliding down a slippery slope, isn't he?
I guess.
Are you a First Amendment extremist? Or
I'm super strong on the First Amendment. I think the cure for bad speech is more speech. Yep. Now the one exception.
I think the cure for bad speech is the Second Amendment.
that's why they're one and two, right?
As people say, the reason the First Amendment's first because it's so important, and the reason we have the Second Amendment in case the First Amendment doesn't work.
That's right.
I think that what's going on with Facebook now. I'm not saying they should be regulated by the government, but I think it does raise a lot of First Amendment issues because they have such a huge reach, and they're an unregulated business almost exclusively, and the Russians were able to interfere with our elections, and they're poised to do it again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the solution is, but that's the one current debate on the First Amendment where I say society's not being well served by unfettered speech. But in general, yes, I think the First Amendment, more speech is better than trying to censor speech. In almost
what did you think
case.
Of AOC's question to Zuckerberg about would you let the ad that said exactly the opposite of the truth? And he didn't have a good answer for that.
It was awesome.
She spanked him real good.
Huh? His answer should be, we have made so much money that we will spend whatever it takes to review these ads and have the same standard that television stations have, which is, if the thing's false, we're not going to air it. Mm-hmm. Now, with political speech, you got to err on the side of deference to open debate. But if it's unambiguously false, and they could hire 70,000 people to review political ads. Or what Twitter did today is say, we're not going to run political ads. So they could turn down the money.
Yeah.
That'd be another way to deal with it. But so I thought that was a case where she was fighting for justice and putting him on the spot quite rightly.
She spanked him.
That's tricky. How it could work.
That's tricky because Facebook, they try to play it both ways. Like, are you a publisher? Are you a portal?
Can I place an ad in the New York Times? I mean, politicians say things which are unequivocally false all the time.
They do, but television channels for years have turned down ads if their lawyers determine that the thing's false.
That's right.
Yeah, because they're
now
broadcasting
the bar is high. But Facebook's broadcasting it. They're sending it to lots of people. And I think they, at a minimum, they should be looking at that. And that's what she asked him about.
We got to lock up Zuckerberg. That's the
See, I'm not worried about an unequivocally false ad. I think it becomes exposed so quickly.
It doesn't.
People don't care. Some people don't care if it's wrong. They care if it feels right.
They'll share it. They don't know it's wrong. They'll keep sharing and sharing before
tell
you know.
I can tell you right now that the Trump campaign will spend tens of millions of dollars on Facebook ads that are, at a minimum, misleading. And in some cases, false.
Yep.
In the last week of the campaign, targeted to voters in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, and there'll be no, in a model, right? Somebody, a politician says something false. The model is, well, the press scrutinizes it, and the opponent says that's false. You do it in the last 72 hours before Election Day. There's no way to police that.
What scares me, and this is almost right. So then Elizabeth Warren will have an ad about Michael Brown's murder.
Yeah.
And they're going to run that, and that's a lie. And,
wait, what about, what's the lie?
Well, first, using the term murder in a legal context would be incorrect.
No, it was, it, by any standard that we use, Darren Wilson was exonerated, and nobody can say that Michael Brown was murdered. It was Eric Holder investigated it, and Jonathan Capehart wrote that great column he's on. So I'm very reluctant. I don't know how they can wade into this and separate what's true and what's not true.
They got to give deference to them, but if it's unambiguously false,
clearly false clickbait type stuff. Yeah. Because then you could make the argument
I'm still call OJ a murderer. He was cleared.
He was cleared, but they caught him with the Stealing Your Own Shit Back Act of 2002, whatever that was. It's a very strange thing where I don't feel pity for people who are misled by clearly false news where
people
send you these links are like seeing it's like the URL is absolutely bullshit.org. You should have known that this was fake, because what they do now is there was a site called The Daily Current that was clickbait, but it wasn't, they said, well, we're satire, but it wasn't like The Onion or The Babylon Bee. It just was incorrect information to drive traffic.
We did a poll today of Republicans in Alabama, just Republicans in Alabama, and said, how many of you think Barack Obama's a Muslim?
Yep.
How many of you think would say he's a Muslim?
Yep.
I'd say the numbers would be pretty high.
40%, 50%?
But I would counter that with, if you do a poll of people living in the Upper East Side of New York and came up with whatever demonic thing you want to say about Donald Trump, they would also say they agree with that. Now, I'm not saying they necessarily think it's true, but they like the way it feels. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we have to detach from this idea of truth. That's take it up with Oprah. She's the one who gave us the idea of your truth, his truth, her truth, they's truth. What we're in a realm now where we're outside of rationality, where if something makes you feel a certain way, you can say, well, that's true enough.
Right.
It becomes the wrong question to ask.
Just to be clear, not that there's anything wrong with being a Muslim.
I was always
amazed when the Democrats would say, how dare they accuse Barack Obama of being a Muslim? Or how dare they accuse him of being born in Kenya?
It's like a lot of people, both things.
Nothing wrong with it.
Pretty great people.
It's just factually wrong, is my point.
Yeah. I'm more concerned about the opposite end of the problem with the First Amendment. That, for instance, sounds like somebody can write on anywhere on the internet, like Sherrod Small has herpes,
right? Yeah.
And then forever, anybody who Googles you will see this.
Well, you're going to have to write after it. No, he don't.
No, and if it's true.
That doesn't sell as well.
If it's true, it's an absolute
offense.
He got
AIDS. And then let us,
that doesn't seem right to me. I'm kind of sympathetic to this European idea of a right to, well, to be forgotten.
Well, there's a legal case in Italy where there were two brothers who got into a fight and one stabbed the other in a restaurant. And this is going back like 20 years ago.
You people are really.
Yeah, really animals we are. But what the guy sued saying that he wanted all search results to that case to be removed. So there's a movement to saying that if you, it's almost like having your record expunged, but expecting Google and the internet to do it.
Yeah.
Now, we're lucky in the United States, we have laws that kind of are a little bit, they err on the side of let's have a free-for-all and let things sort themselves out.
Right.
Whereas in Europe, like their libel laws are much stricter than what we have here in the United States.
What we have here is that we've just privatized it. If you have enough money, you can pay someone to scrub that information on the internet.
And you can pay someone to circulate it.
Which one of you has time tonight to go fix my Wikipedia page?
Ain't that much time in the world, Mark.
Because I'm sick of doing it.
Yeah. I just changed it to say you're a Muslim, so I updated it.
You can never scrub it all the way, though. You're right.
I have to go to my Wikipedia page. People keep putting up that I'm Danny DeVito's son. And I remove it and then...
Guilty!
But who's the person who's like, who's this person who doesn't know and keeps... I'm like, but I'm me. I know that I'm not Danny DeVito's son.
I have to go. I want to kind of just maybe... I guess apologize is the word. You know, I wanted to have you on the. There was a talk of having you on the Comedy Cellar podcast.
Oh, what happened? You ain't have the balls for it. So here you go at Race Wars. Because we do the heavy lifting. Mark, we do the heavy lifting over here.
And I went through such a trauma, including like death threats and threats against my kids and all kinds of stuff.
What?
Yeah. That
you mean when you said we're gonna have me on or from something else?
It's just the podcast in general gets a lot of
this whole thing where I you know stood up for Louis C.K.
right
Louis C.K.'s right to perform
right
I thought
you stood up for others.
Yeah. So and I'm not, I have to tell you, I'm not feeling good about myself right now that I didn't do it.
Not too late.
Not too late.
And that's what I said. I hope you would do it. I think
you see that I kill as a guest. That's what it's
no,
about.
They always try things out on me first, though. That's Noam's
this
way.
This is like New Haven, and now you're Broadway.
Whoa. He's New Haven.
I know. You're trying to make a serious point.
I'm just saying like, because
well,
I...
Well, you should feel bad because you're a fan of him. You like... You know he's a smart dude. You enjoy his political perspective.
It's because I believe in certain principles.
Right.
And I want to live by those principles. And we live at a time when people literally can't separate standing on principle from an endorsement. Like, there was a time when the ACLU would defend blah, 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 and people would always understand, well, they're just standing up for principle.
Right.
And that's not an insult or a compliment to anybody. And I went through that, and it was – and I was happy with myself, and I survived it. And then there's just some PTSD, and I said, well, you know, do I really want to – risk that, but I don't think it would have been that anyway, and so I'm not that proud of myself about it. But anyway,
but you should not, whatever people think of what you did, you should not have your kids' lives threatened. That just shouldn't happen.
Right,
no, it shouldn't happen.
It just shouldn't happen. And so I'm sorry that happened to you, but it is, unfortunately, it is what intimidates people from speaking up when they think something's wrong.
Yeah.
That's what the cancelers count on.
Yeah, well, Barack Obama spoke out today, and we'll see if that has an impact, because he's not afraid, because he can't be canceled, and he won't be canceled.
Mm-hmm. What did he talk about?
There's a pretty cool video that
he said, you know, you shouldn't think that canceling somebody is like a big achievement.
Right.
You know, that's not contributing. Contributing is doing stuff that helps other people, not tearing people down.
Yeah.
And as I said before, he said they're good people who do bad things.
That's facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think,
but he's one of the few people who can say it.
Yeah, because he's in that weird nothing to lose, and people will hear it differently coming from him.
Mm-hmm. He's so laid back, a black dude who lives in Hawaii. What a life.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, it's almost like in some ways it's the same position Chappelle's in, where what are you going to do to him? He's moved beyond your reach.
Yeah.
As far as cancel culture goes, I think it's not just that you should listen to this other person who might have that's very important, but also the idea that you're harming yourself when you cancel people out like that. Because when you eliminate other voices, you don't need to hear what you already know over and over again.
Exactly.
You need to be exposed to things that you don't know. Mm-hmm. And mentioned before, I'm a huge Jordan Peterson fan, and one of the things he says is, always think the other person, go into it thinking they might know something you don't know already.
Right.
And we're such a society that is focused on, like, I know everything.
Yes, yes.
And you don't. Nobody does.
Yes. I think you're giving it too much credit for being motivated by writer. I see it as just a license to be mean and cruel and a bully.
It's a mean
and dress
world
it up
attitude.
As righteousness.
Yep. It's
and
almost
this is
like
the oldest human nature, and exactly. This is mob justice.
The internet has created this kind of mob, facilitated kind of mob, and it makes the whole culture skew high school.
Yeah. It's you young know? Shit.
Yeah. And you're right, because high school, because it's an immature, undeveloped.
Yes,
it's like your brain hasn't
right.
developed.
You have
to handle
leave
another
high
opinion.
School to be cool in college. Like, it's irredeemable in high school.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're just a dude hanging around the.
Otherwise,
parking
just
lot.
The girl on the back brace or whatever.
I'm gonna go. It's a pleasure to meet you. I have your email address.
Thanks for coming.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank
you. Thanks for coming on now.
Exit gracefully.
So the book's out now? What the what's
book's
what
out now? It's available at all your finer booksellers and on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and. Like I said, if you're a Democrat and you're trying to figure out who can win, and our discussion illustrated what a lot of Democrats say, which is, I can't figure out who can win.
Right.
If you're trying to figure out who can win, you read this book and you say, okay, these are smart ideas, which the Democrats are able to do this. And it's also got a lot of great stories about the recent history of presidential politics in terms of what's been effective, what hasn't been effective, and how are the Democrats going to beat this guy? Because, again, beating any incumbent is hard. Beating this incumbent, the people I talked to said, do not underestimate the chances that he will get four more years.
Do you think any of the candidates will read the book?
I think they will.
I think they will, too. You think Trump will read it and call you angry?
White House.
Like, what the fuck are you giving out secrets
think
for?
Somebody he knows
well,
will
no,
read
I mean,
it and talk to him about
I mean,
it.
I think Trump will like it because what does Trump like most of all? But Trump likes the fact that Democrats say, uh-oh. Trump's good, strong. Trump could win again.
Yeah.
And the book, the first chapter of the book is about the fact that Trump led a movement. He said it, and the press mocked him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Press mocked him. When I told you before about how I got invited to talk to him in Trump Tower, while I was waiting for my appointment, a guy named Michael Cohen, who's a little bit more famous now than he was back then, he brought me to his office, and he showed me
this is in Trump Tower.
In Trump Tower.
Yeah.
I was a little bit early, and Trump was in some other meeting. So he showed me in his office these binders. It's 2011. These binders filled with handwritten letters from people from all over the country who would send Trump $5 and a note saying, you must run for president.
Right.
Wow.
Now, I've been to a lot of guys, offices of men and women thinking of running for president. I've never seen anything like that.
Right.
Now, I thought at the time, though, did Michael Cohen, like a little high school project, like write all these letters himself, get out a bunch of ballpoint pens and write some left-handed and some right-handed? They were authentic.
Right.
They were from all 50 states, and they were people saying, my kids need you to run for president. And when I read those, I said, Trump has a lot of flaws, but he is someone who people really respond to.
Right.
And he's talking about things that strike a chord with people. 4 years later, when he ran for president, I thought about those letters. And I said, that was the origins of this movement that he captured. He didn't create it. He captured it.
What do you think created that? What do you think made that spill? You think Obama had anything to do with it? You think it woke up some racist base?
No, I mean, that's part of it for sure. But I think
there
also
we go, race
there's
wars.
There's a long term on brand. There's a long term people of feeling concerned about the future.
Right.
Endless wars. Worried that their kids aren't going to do as well as themselves. And then in 2008 with the financial crisis,
right.
People said, "I've saved all this money for retirement. Gone in a flash. I bought my home." Value of my home, gone in a flash.
Yeah.
And they said, Washington has done this. Washington has made us promises. They haven't kept them. They said, we'll take somebody whose promise is, I'm going to strap a bunch of dynamite to myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to walk into D.C. and I'm going to blow the place up. And then we'll start over. And people said, that's better than another Clinton in the White House.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's better than a career, Jeb Bush, a
but
career
But is that what he's doing? Did he really blow it up, or is he expanding out fucking swamp to the Ukraine now?
He's not kept his promise on a lot of things.
And
but,
is he helping these people that voted for him?
On foreign policy, he's kept his promise.
Okay.
He has not gotten us in any wars. He's getting us out of wars. On trade with China, trade with Mexico, he's kept his promise. He's saying, I'm going to fight to change it. Because if Hillary Clinton had been president or Jeb Bush had been president,
right.
China would still be ripping us off every day.
I believe that.
And he's trying to change it. Now, he's not succeeded yet,
right.
But he's trying.
Right. But he always had beef with China, even before he got into office.
He did. Plus, yeah. He did. But so do the American people. And again, yeah. I would laugh when I would go to these elite conferences, and Democrat and Republican elites would say, oh, well, China cheats on currency, and the trade practices are unfair. But, of course, we have to trade with China because we, you know, that they're our lenders, and we get so many products from them. No. The American people want the relationship to be changed, and, right. and Trump's done that. Domestic policy, he's not kept his word nearly as much.
Right.
For a lot of people, again, if the choice is Trump or someone who's going to take away their private health insurance, mm-hmm. that may be enough to say, you know, I don't love Trump and I hate his tweets and I you know, I find the fact that he did what he did even with the Ukraine or Mueller problematic. But a lot of people are going to say, I still want to have my private health insurance. So the book grew out of panic on the part of some people, deep concern on the part of others to say, if we do not find the person who knows how to beat Trump, we will lose.
Well, do you think someone else is going to get in the race at some point?
I think you're seeing the people.
Oh!
The only question is who most closely reads How to Beat Trump, my book, and memorizes it and internalizes it and does what the people I interviewed say they need to do.
If you had the bet on it, who would you say has the best chance on the Democratic side to really go at him?
If I were betting today,
yeah.
Elizabeth Warren. If I were betting today. God,
do you mean the best chance of winning the nomination?
No, best chance of winning the nomination.
Okay. Nomination.
Best chance of beating him is my old friend Michael Bennett, but he's not going to get the nomination, doesn't look like. But I think he'd get 60% of the vote if he were the nominee.
Really?
Yep.
Do you think Biden could have beaten him if he ran against him in the previous election, if it wasn't Hillary, if it had been Joe Biden?
Yeah.
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 Here's what I think history is going to record, that the worst thing that Hillary Clinton did and the worst thing that Joe Biden did was run for president. When they decided to run, they scared everybody else out of the race. Yep. Who could have won. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think either of them would run. I thought Hillary Clinton, she's a grandparent. She liked going to theater. She had close friends telling her, do not run because you probably can't win. And if you do win, you can't unite the country. Same thing with Biden. I thought after the death of his son, given how old he is, given the fact that he's never made money in his life, I thought he's not going to run. He's going to enjoy being a grandfather and making money for the first time in his life. Yeah. Both of them ran, and there's no greater factor to cite to say, why did Donald Trump get elected 4 years ago, and why might he be reelected than those two people making the decisions they made.
They're in the way of progress. Yeah.
They're in the way of the Democrats being able to beat a guy, again, who is a beast of a candidate.
Yeah. Do you think Bernie wouldn't be able to beat him in 2016?
But the DNC was in the Clinton pockets anyway, so they gave that nomination.
Yeah, and they really kept the Democrats from getting that next generation of contenders to come up because you still had to kiss Hillary and Bill's rings.
Yeah.
Or kiss something else on Bill.
And one of the legacies of 4 years ago that I write about in the book is the DNC helped Hillary, we now know, because of the leaked emails. The DNC and the labor unions and all these other parts of the Democratic Party, they can't weigh in. If they weigh in on behalf of Joe Biden or Pete Buttigieg or Kamala Harris, the left will go crazy and say, once again, the establishment's trying to rig the system against us.
Right.
So Joe Biden, if he were traditional mainstream candidate, establishment candidate, he'd be getting a lot more help than he's getting now. But they can't risk it.
So,
I'm telling you.
Is he raising money? Biden's raising some money, though, right? No?
Not anymore.
Biden has less money in the bank than Mark Kelly, who's running for Senate in Arizona.
What?
Yeah. He's got $9 million in the bank.
Why? He's just deeply unpopular?
No. He doesn't excite enthusiasm, and he's not raising money on the internet the way Elizabeth Warren and Pete Buttigieg and Bernie Sanders are. Because
he's an old man and he'll know how to work.
You got
to
be exciting. You know, he's not an internet brand.
Is Buttigieg really that... I didn't think of him as someone to be taken that seriously.
Because there are a lot of people in the party. If Biden finishes fourth in Iowa, as again, I think he might, the establishment, there are a lot of Democrats who say, I don't agree with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and more importantly, I don't think they can beat Donald Trump. They're going to be looking for somebody else. And if Buttigieg finishes ahead of Biden in Iowa, a lot of people may look to him.
Wow. He will get spanked by Trump.
Oh, mayor of a city of 100,000.
He is going to be,
how many people live in Bed-Stuy?
In my apartment, 100,000.
Exactly. So basically, you have the same responsibilities as Pete Buttigieg.
So would you look at it as like a Mondale-type loss? If it was Buttigieg?
Oh. No.
I'm too young for this.
Here's the thing.
Dukakis?
Here's the thing. Donald Trump was elected president. People say Pete Buttigieg doesn't have the qualifications.
He's never
hosted a reality show. That's true, but he does have other qualifications. Yeah. So I think that his youth will cut both ways. I think being gay will cut both ways if he's a nominee. He's a super smart guy.
Yeah,
and I think that he's a likable guy.
Veteran.
So, and he's a veteran, got military experience. So I mean, they're all flawed candidates. But if you ask me, is he more flawed than Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders? Or Kamala Harris? I don't think so.
And will this impeachment play any role in this election?
Yeah, it'll strengthen Trump.
That's what you really think.
Unless somehow something comes up that causes 20 Republican senators to vote to convict him.
Yeah. Right.
20. Look at the list of Republican senators and
maybe
try to
he
get
has a
20.
Black baby somewhere. That'll get him.
I don't know, man. I can't think of what you could catch him on. He
led the birther movement. Yeah, he's already confessed.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we already know everything we need to know about him.
White people still love him.
Nancy Pelosi was against impeachment for months because she saw what's going to happen. The House is going to waste time in the view of Trump supporters to do their investigation. They're going to be talking about Ukraine and investigations.
It's a waste of time in not Trump supporters' eyes, too. I mean, Congress gets so little done in the eyes of the people.
Yeah. No.
When schools or kids or whatever or lunches or healthcare, anything needs fixing, they're somehow on break, which is unimaginable. It's summer for them all the time, and the rest of us are working. And then all of a sudden, when you say whisper, impeachment, they're all at their desk ready to work. I mean, like, they're showing up, you know, like, early to
work.
You're
right. A lot of people
it's
think that.
It's bad
that's
luck.
Why Pelosi was against it. And it's why a lot of the people I talked to for the book said, you know, our ability to be Trump is not helped by impeachment. It's hurt by impeachment.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's great.
Yeah,
all the rules are off with him. That's the thing that's so mind blowing.
Isn't it?
You can't apply these old structures to him. It just doesn't work anymore.
You need a new
for
defense.
Someone
the
so
zone's
old,
not working.
He's so of this era, isn't he? This is such a gloves off era.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has Trump. You look at the age. They're all at the age where when Reagan was running, they made fun of him as the doddering old man. And they're his age or older, almost all of them.
Yeah.
Trump has incredible energy.
Yeah.
With all that McDonald's.
Yeah, like he just is. I think that's why people like. He eats garbage food.
Garbage.
He talks shit. Yeah. Bangs hot chicks. Like he does like all these crazy. He was like, I always think of the what is it, Nelly Country Grammar, where he mentions, like they used to mention Donald Trump in these songs because they say he was a poor person's idea of a rich person.
Nigga, Prince wrote a song called Love You Like Trump that came out in 1990, and Morris Day, they sung that song. Mm. Like, Trump's always been revered in the hip-hop and black community early on.
Again.
And then now, everybody's like, whoa.
He was like a human gold plate necklace.
He was like the Monopoly man.
People sometimes make fun of me for saying this, but I'm telling you, against the right Democrat, Trump's going to get more African-American vote than he got last time.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I believe that. Yeah. It's possible.
I think he'll get more than Warren. I don't think Warren connects with black people.
Yeah. And if it's Biden, he'll target Biden's record on criminal justice. He will target that with Facebook ads to African Americans. Maybe he'll suppress the vote. They won't turn out to vote.
Maybe Obama will come out for him finally, though.
Maybe.
Ooh,
that's the real swing. Mm-hmm.
That ain't helping.
If only Obama could run again, huh?
Yeah, we don't want these three-time presidents, though.
Why not? FDR did it.
Now, let me
he
ask
did
you
four
this.
Time.
You're a constitutional scholar. Could Obama be vice president?
Yes.
Yes?
Well, what if the, yes. Well, what if he becomes president?
What if the president
can he?
Dies,
he
so?
Can be. No, he can't.
Well, if he's vice president, then there's a potential to become president.
No, not this term, the next time. Don't he have to wait out a certain time or no? He can't come back as a vice
lifetime
president?
Lifetime ban.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But it's never been tested. Why are you shaking your head?
But
so
you can still do it. It's not illegal.
It's never been
it?
Tested.
Yeah. I mean, FDR had, four terms?
Yeah, but they passed a constitutional amendment.
See, as soon as
and you
closed.
Can pass it back. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things have been passed and passed back.
No, who was what is given cannot be ungiven.
Who was the president?
The right prohibition.
Was it Taft who came back for the second term, but not consecutive?
Non-consecutive.
Yeah. Grover Cleveland. That's
he had a gap between it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But those
only one.
That was back when guys would be president, and then they'd be a Supreme Court justice, and then they'd write a book about birds. Like those guys, they did a lot of shit. He'd just go give expensive lectures.
Then Forrest Gump, then Zeller, then back.
Yeah.
I guess it's time to wrap it up. That was a good show. You had fun, Mark?
I'm winded.
You winded, right? There's a lot coming at you.
I used to host an hour show, but we had commercial breaks.
Yeah, we go right through.
Yeah,
right through damn commercials.
Work.
Yeah.
That's what shows that make
sure
money.
Paying the bills for this elaborate set.
You want to plug the book? Do a pluggy plug?
Sure. Again, it's called How to Be Trump, America's Top Political Strategist on What It Will Take. It is not a partisan book. It is a book of reporting about what the smartest Democrats I've met in my 30 years as a political reporter think needs to be done, whoever the Democrats nominate to win. So if you're a Democrat and you want to know how to beat Trump and which candidate can beat Trump, you could buy the book. And if you're a Republican and you're interested to know what Democrats think need to be done, there's some damn interesting stories. And if you just like politics, you'll learn a lot about American history.
Nice. Thanks for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Good to be here. Thank you. Happy to be here.
DeVito, pluggy plugs.
At Joe DeVito Comedy on social media. I'm looking forward to reading Mark's book just so I can have more ammunition when I say I told you so to people after the election. So I'll actually be able to point to it.
Joey, you're the worst.
I am the worst. And not only that, I have a tweet making fun of the Washington Post that has gone viral. At Joe DeVito Comedy, you can see my little jokey joke that has 16,000 likes.
16,000?
Yeah, which is pretty wild.
You're a regular Trump over here.
No, I'm not the best.
How many followers do you have on Twitter?
I think about 15,000.
Wow.
It's not bad for just a regular person like me.
Regular Joe.
So at Joe DeVito Comedy and JoeDeVito.com and on DryBarComedy.com, you can see my special for free. It's clean. Watch it with your family over the holidays.
As Rick Perry would say, mazel tov.
White daughter?
You can catch me on Twitter, Karen Kardashian, K-E-R-E-N. On Insta, K-E-R-E-N, Margolis, M-A-R-G-O-L-I-S. I post my spots. Not this week, but other weeks. I co-host Citywide at The Stand, Thursdays at 7 p.m. So come check me out.
Why not this week?
Boom.
Because Shane Gillis is hosting it.
Yes. We got to get Shane on the show, too. What a show. Come check me out. Do my hour on, Monday, November 11th at the Comedy Cellar. 10:30 p.m. show. Go to ComedyCellar.com. Come see my filthy hour. That's going to be November 11th. And then I'm doing it again on Thursday, November 21st at the Fat Black. 10:30 p.m. show. Go to ComedyCellar.com. And then we got the homecoming show on Tuesday, November 26th. Oh, it's going to be dope. Leslie Jones, Che, Derek Gaines, Monroe. It's a lot of people on that show. So go to ComedyCellar.com on Small World Comedy for that. And I'll be in Mohegan Sun for New Year's Eve. So get your tickets for that. It's going to be some big shows. Casino. New Year's Eve. Bringing the new year in right. Gambling away all my winnings. Mm-hmm. My earnings. Had fun?
I enjoyed it immensely. But like I said, I'm winded.
You're winded, though.
I should have had some protein before.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Thank you. Peace.
Thank you. Nice.